This episode of Table Talk is sponsored by Berry Brothers and Rudd, Britain's oldest wine and spirit merchant. It isn't possible at the moment to go to your favourite restaurant because restaurants are closed. But Berry Brothers and Rudd have nobly stepped into the breach with their fantastic new at-home service. Berry's will send a magnificent three-course meal directly to your house, and they'll also provide the ideal wine or wines to go with the food. What a delicious idea. Go to spectator.co.uk/Berry Brothers to find out more.
Hello and welcome to Table Talk, the Spectator's food and drink podcast. I'm Olivia Potts.
And I'm Lara Prendergast.
And today we are delighted to be joined by Elliot Higgins. Elliot is an investigative journalist. He is the founder of Bellingcat, an investigative website that specialises in fact-checking and open-source intelligence. And he is particularly known for his investigations into the Syrian civil war, the shooting down of Malaysia Airlines Flight 17, and the Salisbury poisonings. And he's the recipient of multiple awards for his journalism. Elliot, welcome to Table Talk.
Thanks for having me on.
Elliot, we always start at the same place on this podcast. Tell us about your earliest memories of food.
Thinking back to my family, my mother's from Cornwall, so my grandmother, she was a proper Cornish kind of lady of the farm, I guess you could call her. So she was always cooking all kinds of things, cakes and treats and pasties in particular. But I always remember whenever, you know, from a very young age, going to her house, which is in the countryside, and having just this spread of all these different cakes and things that she'd made. And it was every time there'd be like five or six different things. And just kind of just always something I remembered. And I always remember as well, especially, she would treat me when I was probably like five or six to like an ice cream sandwich with the two kind of wafers and a slice of ice cream. And I was always used to really look forward to that when I was kind of very young.
And what were mealtimes like with your family?
In general, I mean, we just had a kind of normal sit-down meal. I mean, my mum, she was a trained cook, so it was usually pretty good quality. I mean, my dad was in the RAF, and in the 80s, that meant, you know, we didn't have like tons of money or anything like that. So it was always like a home-cooked dinner. You know, we always had kind of like a roast at the weekend, and that, you know, very, very British, I guess you would say, very 80s and British.
And were mealtimes themselves important? Was it a time when everyone came together, or was it a busy household?
No, I think we always found time to have a sit-down meal with each other, especially when we were younger and, you know, at weekends in particular. I mean, with my dad being in the RAF, I mean, sometimes he was on call and not in the house, but we were never really people who sat down in the front room and had, you know, a tray on our laps. It was always at the table we'd be eating.
And you said that your mother was a trained cook. What sorts of dishes would she have been cooking?
Well, I mean, there was often a lot of kind of traditional British fare. We had a lot of stuff like pasties quite often, again, because she's Cornish, and that was always a, you know, a go-to staple in our household. But she was also a patisserie chef, so sometimes she was always really good at doing desserts. She'd be really good at making stuff like profiteroles and those kind of desserts and pavlovas and those. So that was always a treat in our household.
Yum.
And were you an adventurous eater as a child, or were you holding out for the profiteroles? What was your attitude to
food? Oh, no, when I was very young, probably five or six-ish, when I was first at school, I was extremely picky as an eater. I am often told I only ate custard at school. That was the only thing I would have at school dinners, literally just custard. But then as I grew older, my taste did expand quite a lot. But yeah, I mean, really, when I started traveling around the world more when I was older, I tried quite a more bizarre food just for the hell of having it, really.
Well, one of our questions is normally what are your memories of school food and are they happy, but I suspect you probably didn't have that happy memories of school food if you only ate custard. Would that be
well,
fair?
I had a kind of mixed, you know, when I was very young, I think because I was for whatever reason a very picky eater, and I don't even recall why, but I would only kind of eat custard apparently, and the various flavors of school custard, so, you know, red flavor, brown flavor, yellow flavor. But as I grew older, I mean, I was fine with it. I used to just end up having a lot of packed lunches, so I was always kind of, you know, fine with school food eventually.
And what about university? What was eating like at that point of your life?
Oh, I was, because I never had much money to buy anything that great, I was eating rubbish. I remember just after university in particular, it was when I was working in London with no money, I was in particular, like, often meals were like a 10 pence can of mushy peas a baked potato and instant gravy. And I was living off that for quite some time, which is not the healthiest thing to live on, but it's pretty much all I could afford for a long while.
And were you hampered just by cost or by cooking skills? I mean, you've grown up with a Cornish grandmother who bakes cakes and a patisserie chef mother. I mean, are you learning at their apron strings? Where are you at this point in your life in terms of culinary skills?
Well, I think I'm quite good at cooking. I like to think so. I took like a, I think when I was doing A-levels, it was like a H&D in cookery. We had like a three-hour session. We had free every week, and you could fill it with either just, you know, going off down the pub or doing something useful. So I decided to do this H&D. So I had to do the full kind of exam and everything, you know, cooking a three-course meal with sides and everything in front of a
examiner. You have to tell us what you were making back then. What was on the syllabus?
Well, I mean, they went through the various kind of the standard stuff, you know, how to make cheesecakes and pies and all the kind of very typical stuff. But for my final meal, that sounds very like I'm about to be executed. No, for my last exam, I think it was a sausage and egg pie. I remember that very distinctly because when I was doing the exam, I was doing it in a glass dish and it was quite deep. And I wanted to make sure the bottom cooked when I took it out of the oven. So I lifted it up to check in front of the examiner, forgetting it was one of those stoves where you have the grill pan on the top and the handle was sticking out. And I put my pie right through the handle of the green pan. And she kind of leaned over and said, "Don't we put a bit of garnish on it and no one will notice?" I did that with a duck stir fry. And I made various salads that were nicely presented. I can't remember what I did for dessert, but I always do like, I love making desserts and then eating them. And it's always kind of been, I like kind of experimenting with food.
And what about, it's a bit of a strange question nowadays, given that the pubs are all shut, but what's your go-to order in a pub?
Oh, I do like scampi and chips. It's quite standard, but ooh. I do really like a scampi and chips. So I will go for that quite often. Yum.
And you mentioned earlier travel. What were the first places that you were heading to and what sort of food were you having at that point?
Well, it really only started, apart from a couple of school trips to France when I was at school. Before I started doing all this Bellingcat stuff, I had a business and admin job. And they sent us to Manila once because basically they moved our operations to Manila and we had to train our replacements in Manila, which is always a great feeling. But they really wanted us to try all the kind of food you can get in the Philippines. I remember very distinctly trying two things, chicken intestines on a stick and ballot. I don't know if you've come across that.
No, tell us about it.
That is a joy. So you take a duck egg, wait for the little baby duck to develop a bit, and then you cook it and eat it. So you break the shell open and there's this kind of cooked baby kind of duck staring up with you, sometimes with feathers on. And I will admit I was extremely drunk when I had enough nerve to, you know, crack that open and have a go. But I did it and I guess it's an experience. It wasn't the nicest thing in the world, but it was, you know, whilst you're there, you might as well give it a shot.
Gosh. And where else have your travels taken you?
Well, now with Bellingcat, we're traveling around so much doing kind of workshops and I've been all over now. I mean, probably the furthest afield I've been was Jordan for one of these conferences where I got a very severe case of food poisoning from going out for dinner in a Tunisian restaurant and finally bumped into the journalist Seymour Hersh, who asked me directions for breakfast, I remember, and I was just thinking I don't want to be sick on Seymour Hersh because I was feeling so ill. I was like really sweaty and shaky and I was just drenched in sweat feeling awful, and it was like oh, where's the dinner hall? I was like, oh, it's downstairs on the left. But yeah, I've been very fortunate to be able to travel around and, you know, try all kinds of different foods.
And what would you say your favorite cuisine is?
Well, my wife's Turkish, so, you know, about 11 years ago when we got married, I got exposed to Turkish food for the first time. I kind of fell in love with it quite a lot. You know, I think lahmacun is a particular favourite of mine at the moment. We order that quite a lot. I mean, it was difficult to get in the UK. And fortunately, in Leicester, they've got some more restaurants now. But yeah, just Turkish food I've really fallen in love with, all of it, really.
And for those listeners who don't know what lahmacun is, can you describe it?
So it's sometimes called Turkish pizza, but it's more a stone baked oven kind of flatbread that has minced lamb usually combined with chopped tomatoes and usually some sort of garnish like parsley. It's baked in the oven and then you fill it up with salad, roll it up and eat it like a kind of pizza wrap kind of thing. But it's really delicious. It's one of my favourite.
And tell us a bit about your work with Bellingcat, sort of frame through how, you know, how was your sort of diet whilst you're working on these big projects? Because it must involve a lot of concentration and a lot of hard work. So what are you eating and drinking whilst you're doing that?
Oh, well, I mean, often it's mainly black coffee if it's going that late. My wife is a very health conscious person, so we eat a lot of very healthy food. I think literally everything we eat is organic at the moment. So just to give you a sense of where we are with that. So generally, I mean, if I'm working, I'll at best be having maybe some cashew nuts and dates and coffee with that.
And would you say it's more your wife or you who's the cook in the house now? Or a combination?
I would say I'm more the cook of the house, but I take a lot of direction about what we can and cannot eat. My 6-year-old son, he's a very picky eater like I was at his age. Although I feel that is more, not him having any kind of issues with food, he just is very kind of controlling. It takes a lot to convince him to eat something new, but once he does it, he has no problem with it. So that's kind of means I have to design a meal that's kind of organic. Is we don't use refined flours or sugars, so it's always like icon flour if we're having anything with flour in it, or kind of, you know, pasta that's organic and spell and, you know, those complexities. So my meals plans I kind of do in advance, and of course with everyone being locked down and all the supermarket shopping needing to be done like a week in advance, it requires a lot of planning. Yeah. Now so I have like a spreadsheet where I put all the meal plan down, and then I think that's because I'm, you know, a researcher as well, I investigate which foods I can actually eat in the house, and then I look it up on the internet and figure out what we can actually have as a meal.
And this is maybe perhaps a bit more of a, again, another kind of moot question given the circumstances, but I read in an interview you'd given in the Evening Standard that recently you'd found restaurants a bit tricky for security reasons. I mean, has your work had a kind of impact on where you feel you can go to eat and drink?
Yeah, I mean, generally I won't eat out anymore just because I'm quite paranoid about, you know, it sounds weird to be paranoid about going out to eat, but, you know, we've investigated people like the poisoning of Navalny, where they put the poisoning on his underpants in his hotel room, and you just start worrying a bit. I travel a lot. I was flying back and forth to Amsterdam a lot to visit our office in the Netherlands, and that would be every 2 weeks, but I would never eat any food in the hotel, you know, eat stuff in the minibar that wasn't packaged, or if at all. I'd usually just pop out, go to the local supermarket, buy a packet of sandwich and, you know, something fairly edible, and just eat that in the hotel rather than ordering food in. Because you just start. I mean, there was one time I was sat in my hotel room. I'd stayed in the hotel quite a few times, and there was a knock on the door, and it opened up, and it was a guy in a suit and with a name badge, and he said, "Oh, Mr. Higgins, we'd like to thank you for staying in our hotel 10 times." And I thought, I've never heard of anyone do that, but fine. And he handed me a package. He said, "We'd like to thank you by giving you these treats." And I was like, "Oh, great, treats." And it was a really big tub of really nice cookies and these kind of hard candies. I thought, "Oh, great, free food. Perfect." Mm-hmm. Then I thought, that guy could be anyone who's just found a name badge. So I ended up just convincing myself there was like a decent chance it was probably poisoned. So I just threw it all away. And it was a lot of food. I was very disappointed. The next day, I pack up, leave my room, hand in my key card. And I'm just walking out the hotel. A manager comes over to me and says, "Oh, Mr. Higgins, I hope you enjoyed the cookies." And I was just thinking of them kind of floating in my toilet. I was like, "Oh, yeah, they were absolutely delicious."
But I suppose there's reason to be paranoid about these things, given as you say, what's happened. And it does seem as though food is quite often involved in poisonings. Is that fair, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, from our experience, you know, with the Navalny case, I mean, first they suspected it was the water bottle when it happened in August. So that put me off having free water in hotels. And then that kind of, they said it was in his underpants. So I've got to be a lot more careful about my underpants now as well, which is a change of lifestyle. But yeah, it's, I mean, doing the work we do, and, you know, I've been spoken to by the British Counterterrorism Police after we've done the Skripal case, just to like warn me that, you know, now you've done something stupid, this is what you have to expect. And like some of my other colleagues who've done a lot of work into these assassinations have also had varying levels of involvement with the police, talking to them about their security. So when you're travelling around and you're travelling by yourself, you just have to take that kind of extra level of precautions.
I mean, you sound fairly phlegmatic about it, but it's obviously a deeply stressful part of your job. Was it something you enjoyed before, being able to go out and eat and go to restaurants with people, or was it not really a part of your life?
Oh no, I would systematically work through room service menus if I stayed at a hotel repeatedly. I would just try all the little things to find out what they were like, because sometimes you find really good stuff. There's one hotel in Amsterdam that was really good chicken, and I'm really annoyed I can't order it from there anymore, because I used to love going there, getting the chicken. It was always like, oh, so succulent and delicious, and now I won't order it because I'm just so worried about going through there. Yeah, I would just, I remember going to an event. It was somewhere in Germany, like miles away from Berlin. And they put me in a really, really nice hotel. And I thought they'd put me in far too nice a hotel for my standards. But they had like a 50 euro burger. I thought there's no way I'm going to pass up a chance to spend 50 euros on a beef burger. And it was really crap. It was like they just stuck, let's have some just foie gras in there. They just threw in lots of really expensive stuff to up the price. And it was just rubbish. It just tasted awful. And the burger was like really dry, yet somehow at the same time, incredibly greasy. It was just rubbish. But yeah, I just always like, if I go to a hotel, I'll just find something interesting on the menu. And well, I did at least. And then try that.
Given that we haven't really been able to travel that much, what have you been cooking at home and what have you been sort of finding comfort in when it comes to food?
Well, with the dietary restrictions we have, with my son being incredibly picky, it's fairly sometimes limited. But I've been doing a lot of baking with my kids because they're really into the Great British Bake Off and the Junior Bake Off, which we've just finished watching. So they're...
Isn't it wonderful?
Yeah, and then they just... The thing is, they're at this point now where they can actually just go off and bake themselves. And the cakes aren't always perfect, but they're good enough. And we just leave them in the kitchen for an hour. And then we've got, oh, great cake. We didn't have to make it ourselves. So it's nice they're now at that age. We can kind of leave them in the kitchen without there being either blood or other mess everywhere.
And what's your... If you had to choose, what's your favourite cake?
Oh, that's a good one. I do like a good brownie, especially a really kind of fudgy one. A good fudgy brownie, that's what I like, yeah.
And we normally finish by asking, what would be your desert island meal?
Ooh, it's a bit cheeky, but I definitely for dessert, I would have a Turkish, you call them pasta in Turkey, but they're like very decorated, like creamy, delicious cakes. You see them in sale all over in Turkey. One of those, a really big one of those. I assume size is no limit. And then... I really like Chinese food, in particular squid, salt and pepper squid. I would definitely have that. And then, you know, I guess a side of chow mein along with that. Yeah, I think that would be pretty good. And a good dark beer to go with it as well.
That sounds delicious.
Like an excellent meal.
I would feel very ill afterwards, I'm sure. But it would be, I'd be on a desert island.
I'm now craving every item.
Yeah, definitely chow mein.
Elliot, thank you so much for joining Table Talk. And Elliot's book, We Are Bellingcat, an intelligence agency for the people, is published by Bloomsbury and is available now.
Thank you for joining us on The Spectator's Food and Drink podcast. For more recipes, food history, stories and drinks, you can head to The Spectator website. La pauvre fleur disait au papillon, c'est...